Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, 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 and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Good to be with you once again. Tech Talk, of course, it's our chance to dig into the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. We love to hear how it's going for you. If you've got a technology-related question or comment or suggestion, then you can get in contact with us here at Tech Talk. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this time, we'll be speaking to the team behind the iAccessibility app. We'll also be rounding up some of the best audio-described museum tours available. Plus, we'll be checking in with some of your listener emails as well. That's all to come. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman, and Jackie Brown. Welcome in to all of you. Good to have you here. Hubert, let's come to you first. What's in your technology in tray this time?
Well, this is a bit of a teaser. So as of this recording, I have seen this pop up on social media on X and also on the AppleVis website itself. So there's been a comment added to the post which talks about the closure on AppleVis. And the comment is from David Goodwin himself, who ran AppleVis. And the comment stated that there are some exciting news coming and to watch the space. So not as such a news, but a bit of a teaser.
Right. OK, well, we're keen to hear from all of you in Radio Land. What are you using now to keep up to date with the most accessible apps? And how do you encourage other people to get started and support them with their smartphones? What resources are out there that you would highly recommend? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. UK. Callum Stoneman, what's in your inbox this time?
So, funny you say inbox, actually, because this is related to Outlook. So, the new Outlook, the not-so-accessible Outlook, as it's commonly known, there's been an update to JAWS. Now, this isn't breaking news. This was the July release, I think it was, where this came out. But I spotted in the release notes, they've added some keyboard shortcuts for this new version of Outlook. So this is the kind of web-based version. And they're not groundbreaking. They don't suddenly make it usable, but you can do the same things that you can do in the classic Outlook. So like Alt-1, when you're in a message, Alt and 1 will tell you the message headers, so like who it was from and who it was sent to. Alt-2, I think, tells you the date. Alt-3 tells you the email address that it was sent to. Alt-4 will tell you what's in the CC field, and Alt-5 will tell you the subject. So because of some of the issues that are on this new version of Outlook, it's not, you know, it doesn't suddenly fix everything, but it's nice to know that it's being worked on. And clearly, with JAWS at least, you know, Vispero are scripting things in to use it, so that if this does get forced upon us at the end of the year, at least there is work going on, which I find quite reassuring.
Yeah, I mean, nothing ever lasts forever, right? There's always going to be change. I guess the hope among the community and from users is that accessibility bugs are kind of shaken out before release, because this is a bit of a theme, isn't it? This happens from time to time. We get a new piece of software comes along and it goes out the door, and I'm sure they've checked it for security, you know, and things like that, and they've checked that it meets all those requirements, but accessibility needs to be a quality gate in that release process before you're forced to use it. And time and time again, that gets overlooked. And so we need accessibility to be in at the ground, because it's always more expensive, isn't it, to try and retrofit accessibility later.
Yeah, it's so much harder. I mean, I worked in an accessibility team for, you know, about 18 months, and we would see this all the time. You know, people would come to us and say, oh, yeah, can you just bear in mind that, you know, the process was we have to be involved from the start. But people would come to us and say, oh, can you just, we've got this new page or this new section or this new feature in the app. Can you just check it for accessibility? Yeah, sure, not a problem. Yeah, when's it going live? Tomorrow. And you know, you look at it and you go, oh, right, okay, well, so there's this that doesn't scroll properly when you've got VoiceOver on. There's these buttons that are unlabeled. There's this, there's that. And there's always a, it either goes live not quite, you know, where it should be, or there's a last minute scramble for everyone involved to try and get it resolved.
Yeah, and it's not just the right thing to do, right? One in five people has some sort of disability. Anybody can become disabled at any point. But often, when you make something more accessible, you improve the experience for everyone. Jackie Brown.
Well, this is the time of year when young people are returning to school and maybe universities or looking for clearance at starting universities. So I'm thinking at the moment of apps and devices that people can use for scanning. We're being asked that by some customers now. They're starting university. They want to tap into the DSA, Disabled Students Advice Service, and basically they want to know what's out there that they can use for scanning their textbooks. So it's either going to be a standalone device like a Pearl camera with open book for jaws, or it could be the Hark Reader, which is a standalone portable device, or it can be an app on your phone. So I'm looking at kind of what's out there for people and what advice to give them depends on their circumstances and their use case, whether they've got a smartphone, whether they're not equipped with a smartphone or can't use that, so they need something standalone. So there is a lot to choose from, and that's kind of what's in occupying me in my inbox at the moment.
Yeah, and then eventually, of course, you do get sometimes specialist content where, you know, the OCR software just isn't going to cut it, right? If you want to, I don't know, read a science subject or music or something like that, you may just need a good old-fashioned human at the end of the day.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, those people that are in higher education can avail of the DSA service. But those who can't and they're just doing maybe further education where DSA is not available, then they have to work out how they can get somebody to act on their behalf. Or in many cases as well, the other issue is taking notes. A lot of people find it really difficult. They're not Brailleless. Braille's not their first code. So they struggle. They need somebody to take notes for them. So there are a lot of issues floating around at this time of year when people are sort of starting new courses or going back to school or, it's an interesting subject.
During my misspent youth, I used to take a dictaphone to my lectures at university and record, you know, sit at the front and record the lecture. And then I realised that, do you know what? If the device was recording the lecture, I probably didn't even need to be there. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Look, if you are back at school or college or starting university, we would love to hear from you. What technology are you using? Or have you got a challenge that you need a piece of technology to solve? Do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, Jackie, thank you so much. Stick around, it's another Tech Talk.
One of the resources out there, one of the websites that intends to provide us with that kind of service is iAccessibility. And I'm joined now by Michael Dowies from iAccessibility. Michael, thanks for joining us. I want to start with you first. So what's your background? Are you one of the founders of this site?
So I am. Thank you so much for having me on today. It's such a pleasure. And the origin of this site is my creation. It's been around since 2010, and I felt like I believe me and a few other folks had the same idea. So I created iAccessibility, and some folks created AppleViz. And I felt like there needed to be a resource, and I was a blogger at the time. I had never had my own blog. And so I started by writing about different apps that I used on a day-to-day basis and how accessible they were with VoiceOver, because I felt like that would be a great resource. And it was called the iAccessibility Report, and It grew from being a WordPress blog, iaccessibility.wordpress.com, into being a full website, podcast, and other resources. I didn't really want to do what AppleViz was doing, so I kept it as a blog and articles and building community. And so I felt like, you know, that needed to continue because more than one resource is always good, but we also extended into, you know, other areas too. So it wasn't just Apple on the site as well.
Yeah, so it's been around since 2010. So this was the very early days of the iPhone actually being accessible, wasn't it? I think 2009
it was, yes.
was VoiceOver when VoiceOver right. first came. And then a bit later on, we got things like, you know, well, we had third-party apps, but, you know, we got things like Braille support. It was very much when VoiceOver was in its kind of...
the early days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, was the idea then to kind of show people, particularly other blind people, that actually we can use a touchscreen?
Right, exactly. It was to show, here's what's possible, because there are so many things that we could do that people don't even think of. And I tried to put a, you know, on our blog post, we would, you know, talk about which apps were accessible, but, you know, how they could be used at the time. I think there's over, at this point, 1,600 posts on the website. So those include podcasts and things like that. So we try to put a little different spin on things compared to, you know, not just AppleViz, but other websites, just so that I'm personally low vision. And I feel like there's not as much representation for the low vision users. So we tried to create a very rich environment for that as well.
Yeah. And has it been, because there's now a kind of network of podcasts, isn't there?
There is. There's the IACast network, and we do all kinds of shows, and things come and go, kind of, I guess, kind of like a TV station, you know, things come in and they come out, so.
So you mentioned AppleViz a couple of times, and I've got to ask, you know, what was, because of course AppleViz was the, not to, you know, invalidate your efforts, but I think AppleViz was like the main Apple resource that people went to.
Yes.
What was your reaction when you've read the blog post about that David Goodwin put out, you know, about closing the site down and the reasons that he mentioned for it?
You know, I was, when I read the blog post, I was, well, first off, I was very concerned because of David's health, because of what was posted. You know, I wish him all the best, and I hope that he is doing well, recovering. I was honestly very concerned, as AppleViz is an amazing resource and there's so much user generated content on the website, and you know, anybody can build a website, not anybody can build a community, and they've done a very good job at building that community. And so I was very concerned to see all of that data just being, you know, going poof. I mean, yes, there's always the Internet Archive and things like that, but there's more concerns with not seeing more data there, or people who do not know how to use things like the Internet Archive and things being able to find.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's your average user, though, isn't it?
Right.
That we need to be, you know, and I think most people probably don't know about the Internet Archive, really, unless you're,
right.
unless you're like us, you know, kind of on the techie side.
Right.
What's the role of iAccessibility now, because it's gone up through, you've done quite a bit of work on the site. In fact, before you answer, I should just say we're recording this show a little bit more in advance than we normally would because of summer and holidays and stuff. And at this stage, there's a little, there's a bit of a teaser comment on the AppleViz post saying, watch this space. So we don't know at the minute what's going to happen with that site. But if we went with the assumption that was put out originally, which was at the end of August, it's going to go offline. And obviously you guys have done a bit of work now. You've started putting together forums and an app directory and stuff. Is it intended to be a bit of an AppleViz replacement? Is it kind of picking up where they left off? You know, what are your plans?
That, you know, that's kind of the goal, is to pick up where AppleViz has left off. If they have decided to continue the site, that's great. But I think that there needs to be other resources available. You know, I'm also an app developer. There is an iAccessibility app. And one of the things that I've always believed in our community is that to encourage growth of our members. So you know, we've had app developers post in our app directory, and that's typically been not promoted on AppleViz. And so we want to be, you know, we're creating something new, right? But we also want to be different. We want to allow a more transparent and open community to allow developers and users to post their experiences with apps alike. And so that's what we're providing. You know, it's a very open, positive space. And I'm not saying that AppleViz is not positive, but even if you look at their FAQs page now, there are certain limitations because you can find that at the bottom of their site still. We are not having a lot of those limitations for people to post their own, you know, promote their own ideas, their own resources and things like that, because part of being a good community is to connect people together, to show, you know, now if there's spam, of course, you know, that has to be reckoned with and dealt with. But
yeah,
if people want to show off their, like, hey, look, I'm building this this other resource, we want to showcase that. We want to bring out what's in our community so that people know what's available. And I feel like that's just as important as providing your own resource, as allowing people to connect and share what they're doing, because what iAccessibility is doing may work for a lot of people, but may not work for everybody. So we kind of want to be able to be that connector of resources, so people can come here and say, this is where people can post what they're doing, being creative and things like that. So we can elevate our community, whether it be through Apple or Android or Windows or however we do it. You know, we have more of an emphasis on Apple because that's what we started with. And I mean, it's kind of in the name, iAccessibility, but we want it to be for everything and very inclusive.
Yeah, and I think it is worth stressing that point that we've been talking a lot about Apple and, you know, VoiceOver and low vision accessibility, but it's not just an Apple site, is it? There is room for everything on there.
Right. We've had blog posts talking about gaming. We've had blog posts talking about, I mean, I don't think I've written an Android blog post on there, but we've had things, and we even have our first Windows submission for the Windows App Directory. So it's all pretty exciting. And, so it's meant to be very much inclusive. I don't think anybody should or could replace what AppleViz was. So I think if anything is to come up in this space as a resource, it needs to be unique. It needs to have its own qualities that separate it from AppleViz.
In the blog post announcing the closure, or I guess potential closure, we should say now, David mentioned about sustainability, essentially. You know, you've got to run this site kind of 24/7. You've got to be keeping an eye out for issues. You've got to be keeping an eye out for spam. You've got to be keeping an eye on the community, all these different things that go into it. And it's very much, you know, a full-time job, but with no pay and, you know, very few people behind it to help out. How do you, I know it's probably impossible to say, but how do you plan to kind of get across those challenges?
That's a great question. And this is what I've been telling everybody is, I created this website, but it's not about me. And I had a vision for what I wanted it to be and still want it to be, but I've always said on my podcast, the IAcast, I want people to host and do different things on the podcast and on the website. So, you know, say, I go on vacation and I come back and I say, wow, look at all this great content I can look at on a website I created. And so we have a team of folks that is working together to build this community. We're also looking at creating a nonprofit. So the team and community manage and steer the progress of iAccessibility. And that will also allow us to, you know, offer different things down the road, potentially training, potentially, you know, ways for people to learn about new technologies and events and things like that. So there's a lot of things in the works with this, and the goal is for it not to be a one-man operation, but for the community and the team behind it to have ownership to build something that is ever-evolving, ever-changing. And we're already doing that with, you know, we have AI in our app directory. You can search based on an AI question on the website, and that is working fantastically right now, and we're always looking for ways to improve that. So I'm very excited that, you know, we have a team that, you know, whenever I'm so used to just doing things, and I can go to the team and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? And like, you know, another thing we added was a rating system in the app directory. So you could say, you know, a 5 is the most accessible with a screen reader, and, you know, 1 is no, you just don't even try. So those little things that, you know, I say to the team, hey, what do you guys think about this? Let's do it, you know, and they vote, and we make sure that everything we typically do and plan is voted on. So that's why I'm really excited for the future of this, as it is a truly democratic, you know, nonprofit-based organization that's in the works to create a resource that will ever be changing and evolving.
That AI search on the app directory sounds pretty cool, actually. I'm going to check that out. So as things are at the minute, what's open available for us as a community to get involved in? There's the app, I know there's the app directory. What else is available for people to get involved in, and how can we get involved?
So there is the app directory. There is the IACast podcasts. And I'm working, and as I mentioned, everything is to be community driven. So we're looking to have people from our community to submit demos, submit resources that will be, of course, moderated. But there's going to be submission forms everywhere on the website. So just like there's a submission form for the app directory, there's going to be a submission form for podcasts. There'll be submission forms for the report, and there will be guides. And all of those things will be very prominently displayed. And even in our app, we have an iAccessibility iOS app. And we're working to make it to where users can submit content and ideas from the app. And so, you know, we intend to have guides, the report blog, so that, you know, that it just keeps the name report because that's what it was for, you know, 14 years. Why change it now? And we have the app directory, and we have our forums as well. We're currently using a system called Discourse, and we are going to be reaching out to them to make that more accessible. It seemed like the best approach at the time, and it's neat because you can add it to your home screen, get push notifications on your phone. And we've noticed that there is problems with the accessibility with NVDA and JAWS and Windows, but with VoiceOver on Macs, you know, how ironic, and iPhone, it works extremely well. So we're going to be reaching out to them. We think we've found a lot of the accessibility issues and know how to fix them. So we're going to be reaching out to Discourse to make those changes.
Okay. Well, if people want to get involved and view the website and make submissions and stuff, where can they go to do that, and how can people get in touch with you?
Sure. Everything starts at iAccessibility.net. And you can find the latest app directory listings, the forums. You can find basically links to all of our social media at the bottom of the page. But I'll give some of those here on X for iAccessibility One. You can search for iAccessibility on Facebook. Mastodon, it's iAccessibility at iAccessibility.social. And you can email me directly, Mike, that's M-I-K-E, D's and David, O-I-S-E at iCloud.com. We're still setting up emails, but that will be done very soon. And, you know, I want to ask you, Callum, what is something you're excited about on the website?
I think just bringing back what was going to be sadly going away, I think, to be honest. I know, like you said, this isn't supposed to be an AppleVis replacement as such, but it was such a valuable resource. And I never thought I'd be upset to know that a website was going,
right.
You know, but I think it just, I think for me, what it blows my mind, you don't really think about how much you need to know, or, you know, or how much could benefit you. as a new user, you know, because I've been using the iPhone in particular. Well, I've been using all assistive tech, really. I've been using it for years. And there's things that you just do and you just know that you forget that, you know, new people don't. So to have somewhere that people can go and keep that going is incredible. You know, it's going to be so valuable.
Fantastic.
Well, there you go. iAccessibility.net, that's the letter I, and then the word accessibility.net. It's a fantastic website with a lot of great work going on, so please do have a look at it. And Michael Deweys from iAccessibility, thanks for joining us on Connect Radio.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk headphones, or more specifically, outdoor headphones. And what's best when you go outdoors for you to listen to either it's GPS, navigation apps, or anything else in between? Join me to talk about this is our very own Alan Russell. Alan, how are you doing?
Yep, all good. Ready to talk headphones, and I've tried a few.
Yeah, so, you know, let's tell us a bit how you've found, you know, what you're currently using. How did you get to the headphones you're currently using for outdoors?
I suppose for me, I mean, I like my music. If I'm out and about, I like sometimes to use GPS or if I'm on public transport just to check where I am, or, you know, if a bus stop's coming up or a train stop. So I have different apps that I use for that. But I also like to listen to what's going on in my surroundings. So, you know, if I'm out with a guide dog or if I'm out with a cane, you know, it's crucial you can still hear what's going on around about you. But, you know, I've tried AirPods, different kinds of AirPods. I've had different kinds of Bluetooth headsets. And for me, I kind of settled on Shokz Open Run Pros. So I've had them for about 6 months now. And what I like about them is I like things around the head. I've kind of gone off earbuds or earbuds in general, that kind of style, because I find that, you know, with working like you, Hubert, you know, you're wearing headphones all the time. If you're in the office, you've got jaws in your ears. If you're in the studio, you've got cans on as well. For a lot of people, you can actually get sort of ear irritation or ear infections quite a lot because the heat's not escaping your ear. You know, you've got to keep cleaning the earbuds as well, or earbuds, whatever. And I kind of thought, well, let's try bone-conducting headphones. And that'll allow me to keep my ears free. And I tried a few different sets, you know, from like £30 starter sets, which were okay. What was also important for me was having the ability to take and answer phone calls as well. So you're looking for something that's going to be quite good. It's going to be decent with background noise and interference. And I settled on the Shokz Open Run Pros. I think they were about £160 when I bought them. You know, they come in a hard shell case. They've got a USB charger. It's a magnetic charger as well that attaches to the headphones. They're pretty quick at getting up to 100%, and they last a very, very, very long time. And I can check the battery level on my phone really easily because it's on the bar beside your, you know, the time, your phone's battery level and stuff like that. You get the app, you can make adjustments to it as well. And they're just a really comfortable set of headphones to wear too. But as far as I know, you're not a bone conducting headphone man.
No, I mean, I used to be. I've tried a few like yourself. I've tried some of the cheaper alternatives. I think I had the Tayoko bone conduction headphones ones, which were quite cheap, but yet fairly comfortable and actually decent quality, where you can actually enjoy music through bone conduction, which is always quite an interesting experience. But I've actually settled on the Sony Link Buds, which I found by doing some testing work for an app which supported Link Buds, and I was given one set to try. And since then, I quite like them. So these are the Sony Link Buds. They retail for about £149. And they are earbuds, but they have a hole through the driver, making it look like a bit of a ring. And what this allows you to do is hear from the buds themselves the audio, but also hear the environment around you without being processed by a microphone.
Bit like some of the AirPods now do as well. I know I've got friends who have AirPods, and they kind of like them because you can get the noise from outside as well.
You can. I mean, with the AirPod Pros, I've tried it, but the problem is it's processed audio. It's processed by microphones, whereas this audio is literally coming through the little hole in the headphones, which allows the audio to come through basically clearly as it's supposed to be heard, which is quite nice. And what I like with outdoor headphones, these especially, they stay in your ears. So for anyone that loves using AirPods, that's all good, but I don't find they stay in the ear that comfortably, so I actually think that they're comfortable to wear, but I always worry that they're so comfortable they'll just fall out in the middle of the walk.
And then you've lost them.
Exactly, that's £100+ just somewhere on the ground. I want something that, one, I can feel comfortable wearing, but also something that will stay in securely. And I found that the Link Buds do stay in quite securely in the ears.
The shocks are really good. They fit really well. I've had some Bone Conduction headphones, probably a sort of cheaper variety, and even some of the Beats ones, which have been really tight. You know, you can't really wear them for a long time. You know, they start to hurt a little bit. But the Open Run Pros are actually very comfortable. It's a very thin wire around the back of your head as well. And they sit well in front of the ears, you know, nice and comfortable. And you get a really great sound from a really rich sound. And as I say, you know, being able to talk on the phone is quite important as well. And they're waterproof. So, you know, if you're out and about and it does start to rain, then you're pretty much okay. And the battery life is great as well.
How durable are they? Because I found with some Bone Conduction headphones, they would last a year and then suddenly you need to buy a new set.
Well, I'm 6 months or so down the line and so far they're still really good. And they do come with, let's say, that the hard shell case, so you can kind of put them in your bag and you know they're not going to get crushed and bent and broken. They sit inside the case and there's a little compartment you can tuck away the USB charger as well. But no, they're pretty robust. They haven't fallen off, because a bit like AirPods or earbuds, you always kind of, even with Bone Conductions, if you're out and about, you don't want them to fall off. But these do fit very well and they're not sort of uncomfortable to wear for long periods of time either.
How big's the case?
Oh, now you're asking me. What could I compare it to? So if I said to you, if you took a standard CD or a CD size disc, compact disc, maybe about that size, and it's a kind of shell, so it kind of tapers down. It's a zip compartment as well. You know, nice enough, easy to fit into your bag. You need pretty big pockets, though, if you want to stick it in your pocket. If you've got some joggies on or maybe a hoodie, may fit in then. But I like the fact that it's a hard shell and it's going to protect the headphones, especially if you spent £160 on them.
Yeah, you want them to be well protected, but it's nice they can fit in the bag, especially that I'm currently on the lookout for some outdoor headphones because my Link Buds, as good as they are, started to distort. I must have dropped them way too many times.
I do let you know that the Apple AirPods, because you can charge in the case. You plug the case in and it charges it. It's a good, robust case as well. You know, it's nice for keeping the AirPods kind of sealed in. I'm sure there are others that are quite protective as well. But yeah, these work for me, and I say that the case and indeed the headphones are pretty robust. What, maybe if you're maybe lying back in your bed listening to something, as I sometimes do, that they can push forward a little bit. They don't maybe sit right around the back of your head, if you like. They'll push forward a little bit. You maybe need to adjust them to keep them on so you're still listening to Bone Conductions, which you don't need to worry about, I suppose, with AirPods or earbuds.
No, I guess you know, they kind of seem like more, not really lying down headphones, but there's probably headphones for that particular purpose as well, from what I've seen. There you go. There's a few recommendations for you. You know, what do you prefer? Do you prefer the earbuds? Do you prefer Bone Conduction? And if so, do you have any particular favourites? Why don't you let us know your recommendation, and we'd be very glad to discuss it and talk more about it. It's certainly a big topic out there. But there we go. That's a little few tips for you. Thank you very much, Alan, for talking to us about outdoor headphones here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thanks, Hubert.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've heard from Gareth, who writes in and says that our piece on the Hark Reader has prompted him to reflect on accessing content in Welsh. Gareth has been frustrated by the lack of a Welsh voice in VoiceOver on iOS, but Gareth is pleased to report that there are now voices in VoiceDream Reader. Garant and Gwyneth are available to users of VoiceDream Reader wishing to read content in Welsh. All right. Well, Gareth, thank you for the heads up on that one. And if you are a user of VoiceDream Reader, then you may want to check out those two new Welsh voices. We've heard from Will, who said he's enjoyed a recent episode of Tech Talk and was very interested to hear us talk about the Zoom H series of recorders. I should say it's the Essential series. And Will is keen to know, how do they feel physically? Will writes, I bought an Olympus voice recorder with talking menus. I think it's the DM770, and I found it cheaply constructed. So tell us, how does that plastic feel on the Zoom Essential series? Well, I've got an H1 Essential, and it feels pretty solid to me. Anyone else handled any of the Essential series recorders?
Yeah, I've got the H1 as well. I've got the H4 too, and they're both nice. I think the secret with them is to make sure that you put a windshield or something on them, which you can now buy as accessories. But actually handling them, if you've got a really steady hand, then you can get away with just holding it and trying not to move your hand around too much, because it does, there's definitely some pickup, because the casing on them is sort of plasticky. So the secret is to try and hold the device very steady, or leave it lying flat on a table or a surface if you can. That's really your only option, because you will inevitably, especially if you're using the built-in mics, you will pick up some handling noise otherwise, so you just have to watch that.
Yeah, I would describe the plastic as having a matte finish. It feels quite solid to me. It doesn't flex really when you squeeze it, and the, you know, sort of a non-slip matte surface when you're holding it, and then the buttons are very flush with the device. So not that kind of rugged metallic industrial finish that you get on some higher end devices, but certainly good quality solid plastic with a matte finish. So hopefully that helps you there, Will. Will also asks about the Sony Bravia TVs and is interested to know, how up-to-date is the operating system on there? I guess we need to go back to Sony with that question. And Will says, one of the reasons people use the Apple TV or the Roku is because they are more regularly updated from a security perspective. And if the model is no longer being updated, then a streaming stick is cheaper and easier to replace, which is a good point, Will.
It's a good point in general, I think, about updates, because I must admit, that's something that I've not actually thought of with these Android TVs. Yeah, which version of Android is it running? Because it might be running the latest version of the TV's operating system, but if underneath it's, you know, still, I don't know, Android 7, then you're not going to get the latest talkback features necessarily. So that's an interesting consideration, actually, something that I've not thought of.
But then there is an assumption here as well that latest is always best, right? And we know that regressions happen. So having the most recent version might not necessarily mean that you've got the most accessible experience. You would hope so, but it's not guaranteed.
You only have to look at Sonos for that. Sonos is sort of, in a way, their app is a retrograde step. I think it is getting better from what I've heard. I've still not updated mine yet, because I just, you know, just I want to get a, sort of an across the board kind of feel from people whether it is now safe to update or not, but in terms of accessibility. But yeah, it doesn't always mean that the latest version is the best one to go for. And I had heard that, in a way, some of those Sony Bravia TVs are not as accessible now as they used to be, so it's worth thinking.
Yeah, I think they have made improvements, and we certainly spoke with David a couple of weeks ago, so worth going back and having a listen to that conversation. Callum, I've taken the plunge because you've said on this program previously that actually the Sonos app has improved. Usability-wise, it's perhaps not where we were, but in terms of The bumps in the road, actually, we've got headings now, so that helps with navigation. And I've done it, and it's all right. Don't love it, but yeah, it works, basically.
Oh, trust me, it's better than it was. It's a yes. lot better than it was.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And thank you to everybody who advocated on that subject. But yeah, good to hear from you, Will. And let us know if you take the plunge with a Zoom, and we'll try and find out for you which version of Android is being used by those Sony Bravia TVs. If you'd like to get in contact with Tech Talk, it's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we've got a hot ticket to some of the world's best museums. Even better, we can visit them all from the comfort of our couch using free audio-described virtual tours. Many of the world's best museums have tours of their collections through their websites or specific apps, and today we'll be visiting museums you can access from your browser. We'll start in the United Kingdom by visiting the Tate Modern Gallery in London. They've got audio descriptions of some of their most prized works, including pieces by Matisse, Picasso, Jackson Pollock, and Barbara Hepworth. Let's take a peek at one of her sculptures.
Two Forms features two tall semicircular bronze sections standing side by side to form a circle. Their straight inner edges face one another. These semicircular sections are connected to a flat rectangular base at one pointed end. The base is fixed to a white-painted concrete plinth at ankle height. An inscription documents the maker's name and the London foundry, Morris Singer, where it was cast.
You can find these descriptions by going to www.tate.org.uk/visit/accessibility. And you can find even more historical AD recordings by searching audio description : in the search bar on the Tate Modern website and selecting audio in the menu below the search bar. We'll stay in London, but we'll move from South Bank to 48 Doughty Street to visit Charles Dickens House. It was his home from 1837 to 1839, and there he finished writing The Pickwick Papers, wrote Nicholas Nickleby, and most famously of all, Oliver Twist. Today, the Charles Dickens Museum is set up as though Dickens himself just left. It appears as a fairly typical middle-class Victorian home, complete with furnishings, portraits, and decorations, which are known to have belonged to the author. Here's a little snippet of the tour around his study.
The study is a comfortable room, some 4.5 metres from the door to the single-sash window on the right, and around 3 metres across. The walls are painted Dickens's favourite colour of scarlet, with the dado rail and the rest of the woodwork white. Dickens wrote an extraordinary number of newspaper articles, journal essays, short stories and novels here, always with a quill pen, and often by candlelight. He was frequently inspired by the busy household of family, servants and guests around him. An olive green rug with a large geometric pattern covers most of the floorboards. The walls are decorated with artworks from Dickens's novels, and the far wall, with its central fireplace, is dominated by two floor-to-ceiling glass-fronted bookcases.
Listen by going to dickensmuseum.com/pages/audio-described-tour. Next, we'll move further north to Edinburgh for the National Galleries of Scotland, where they've shared audio descriptions of some of their best-loved works. The selected artworks range over 500 years and are all part of the National Galleries of Scotland's world-class art collection. It includes work by Robert Burns, Sir James Guthrie, Johannes Vermeer, Thomas Gainsborough, and more. Let's listen to a clip describing Claude Monet's A Seascape, Shipping by Moonlight.
It is a landscape format, measuring 60 centimetres high by 74 centimetres long. It depicts an atmospheric nighttime scene of sailing vessels in the moonlit harbour of Honfleur, Normandy. This is an early work by Monet, painted with an unusual combination of palette knife and brush, which gives the surface of the painting a richly textured appearance. there is a bold immediacy in the way the paint has been applied, which conveys a sense of energy, of shifting light and movement in its broken rhythmic brushstrokes. The painting is characterised by the dramatic contrasts between dark and light. The moon itself is not visible in the scene, but its effect is certainly on show.
Tour this work and more by going to www.nationalgalleries.org/art-and-artists/features/audio-described-tour-national. If architecture is more your thing and you fancy a change of continent, you can visit the Public Library in New York without having to navigate the traffic. They have a tour describing the key visuals of the beautiful Stephen A. Schwarzman building. Let's hear a clip.
When you walk up those first steps, when you see the lions on the side guarding the area, making it feel special, you enter the building and see the vastness of the space, the kind of opulence of the space, and know that that's not a private residence of a king.
Dubbed the People's Palace, this resplendent building was created to meet the library's mission of being a place for all New Yorkers.
Here you have the center of learning, the center of sharing of knowledge, right smack in the middle of Midtown in New York. So it's a symbol for New York being the center of information.
Bear in mind as you wander through the space that this is a research library.
Like our branches, research libraries are open to all and are host to a diverse range of patrons and visitors every single day. But at research libraries like the Schwarzman Building, our collections don't circulate, but instead are used on-site only in various reading rooms.
Explore the many floors and treasures of the building by listening on the New York Public Library website, which is www.nypl.org/events/tours/audio-guides. Finally, we'll head to the Australian Museum. They've got an audio-described tour of their top 200 treasures, which take you through Australia's history and feature some exciting and unusual objects, including this platypus skin rug.
On the back wall of the case is a platypus rug skin 188 centimetres long by 163 centimetres wide. It is made from 75 skins, with the overall effect being a dark brown pelt with evenly spaced ginger stripes. On the left side of the case is a red kangaroo standing on its hind legs. Beside it, set on a plinth and comparatively small, is a koala clinging to a tree branch. Next to the koala, set on another plinth, is a glass jar containing the body of a Tasmanian tiger pup, a species that is extinct. The pup is 42.5 centimetres long and shows the stripes across its body, which are a distinctive characteristic of this species. On a smaller plinth below is a male lyrebird. The lyrebird resembles a large pheasant and has dark brown feathers.
Explore more of the 200 treasures by going to their website, australian.museum/visit/audio-tours/200-treasures-audio-description. For now, we'll leave you to explore these wondrous museums from the comfort of your very own home. You've been listening to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much to Amelia Hilton there. Now, Mr. Dave Williams, you've been on your travels lately. What sort of attractions have you experienced?
Well, this is a subject that I've recently got very interested in because I was lucky enough to visit the FIFA Museum in Zurich and also Train World, which is a railway museum in Brussels. And both those museums had a system whereby you scan a QR code with your phone and then you are prompted to download an app for that venue. And once you have done that, you can then enter the number of each exhibit, if you will. As you're traveling around the museum, you would type in the number into your phone, 23, whatever, and then press play and you would get the information. So do you remember how when you used to go to museums, you would be issued with a headset? I remember years ago going into a museum in the US, and I had to give them my credit card, and they said that if I didn't return the audio guide, I would be required to pay something like $750. So I was very sure to make sure to get that back to them. But these days, it does seem that the modern approach is this: download an app, do it on your own device, and as you walk round, type in the number. But of course, the challenge is, for those of us who are blind, how do you know which number exhibit you're at unless they present that information in an accessible format, you know, Braille or large print, or ideally both? So those are my experiences, largely positive, but certainly some room for improvement.
I do remember I went to the King's Palace in Spain, in Madrid, and I had exactly that experience with the audio guide. It was this great handheld device where you press the button when you moved to a different room, and you would then be able to listen to what was going on, which I found quite interesting. I've not tried anything more modern, though, so it's quite interesting to hear how they do it these days.
I like the ones where they've put a bit of audio production into the narration as well, so you don't just get a dry description. You know, in front of you, we've got the World Cup from 1966. You know, actually, if you could hear a little bit of crowd noise and, you know, give it a little bit of colour, right? It's audio. You can bring it to life.
Absolutely add to the experience, I find, which would just enhances that little bit more.
I mean, this isn't quite the same for me, but I was, I remember going to Disney a few years ago in Florida, and they had a little box that you could get in some of the parks, which was basically a little box that you put around your neck, and then plugged into it was a headset. It was all wired, so, you know, not the easiest thing to handle, but, you know, it worked well. And as you walked around the park, that would describe where you were and what was nearby and what was going on. And you could, I didn't actually try this because I was with sighted people. I was with my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, and her family. So they were guiding me around, but I think it had some sort of navigation features as well, so you could select certain locations and it would try and guide you to them. And you know, that was brilliant. That's probably the best public audio description type thing that I've seen. Obviously not quite the same as a museum experience, but that was brilliant, you know, walking around. And it was pretty accurate as well from what I was being told. You know, it's describing the attractions, describing the rides and stuff as you walk past them. It was great.
That reminds me of the Royal Yacht in, I think it's in Leith, near Edinburgh, and they have an audio description guide. And when you arrive, or at least it used to be the case, that you were offered the choice of the regular audio tour, or do you want the enhanced audio tour? And if you went for the enhanced audio tour, it would give you very specific directions. Exit to your left, there is a door just behind you, about, you know, so many meters away or whatever. And it would give you very detailed descriptions that were obviously designed for somebody who is blind or partially sighted to get yourself to the next part of the tour. Going back to my original examples, actually, in the FIFA museum, you had to scan a QR code at each station to get the next bit of the audio, and that wasn't always easy to find as well. So sometimes it's about the whole experience, isn't it? Because the audio itself might be fantastic, but actually, what are the logistics of getting connected, using it, also navigating crowds of people around you? Is there a good spot for you to stand? And also, is there anything for you to touch?
Thank you very much, Dave, there. So, yeah, let's hear from you. What were your experiences like going to attractions? Were you using more of the modern technology to hear descriptions, or were you more of the old school type?
Thanks very much for your company this time on Tech Talk. We really appreciate you. And if you have a question or a suggestion, we would love to hear about it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is how you get in contact with us. But that's it. We are out of here for now. So from myself, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich and Callum Stoneman, bye-bye.
See you next time.
Until next time.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.